Hello, and welcome to the Recon Ride. I'm Dane Cash.
And I'm Cosmo Catalano.
And we've reached the grand finale of the Spring Classics, the last one-day race on the World Tour calendar, really, until the Classico de San Sebastian after the Tour de France. Liège-Bastogne-Liège.
Yes, the race nicknamed La Doyenne, which is awfully difficult to translate into English. I personally think, you know, the best English idiom that captures it is the granddaddy of them all, except that La Doyenne is an old woman. And, you know, maybe you could say the grand dame, but, like, that's not English, even though it's sort of an English phrase. It's a complicated nickname. La Doyenne really is probably the best way to put it.
But roughly, we can kind of translate it as meaning something involving being pretty old. And it's called La Doyenne because it is quite literally the oldest of cycling's classics, and older than any of the Grand Tours, for that matter. The Tour of Flanders might get a bit more publicity than Liège, but Liège, the biggest race in Wallonia, the French-speaking part of Belgium, was indeed here first. The first edition of Liège kicked off in 1892, a publicity event for a newspaper called L'Express, and Leon Hua won the first edition and the second edition and the third edition, after which the race went into hibernation for several years, returning again in 1908 and then 1909. There was no race in 1910. They came back in 1911, and I think finally they started to realize that, hey, maybe we actually might be onto something here. We should make this an annual thing. But then, of course, Germany invaded Belgium in the First World War, and the city of Liège actually presented a major target for the German army, which was attempting to invade France via Belgium. So Liège's status as an important site to capture did not really bode well for anyone hoping to race bikes in and around the area. So the Germans invaded, they captured Liège after some fierce fighting over what was a strongly fortified position for the Belgians. And unfortunately, we had no Liège-Bastogne-Liège until after World War I concluded. But then in 1990, we finally got back down to business, and the race ran consistently until 1940, when in an unfortunate stroke of déjà vu, the German army again invaded Belgium. Somewhat amazingly, they did run a race in 1943, right in the middle of the war. But in 1944, Bastogne was the site of some of the fiercest fighting of all of World War II. If you've never seen Band of Brothers, you should give the show a watch, and you'll learn all about Bastogne and the Battle of the Bulge that took place right here. Again, this was not a great place to race bikes, or really do anything at all, be alive for that period of time. But after World War II, the race was back on, and it's been on ever since. And in 1990, maybe the next major year for the race, they changed the finish. They moved the finish to the nearby town of An. So it's Liège-Bastogne-Liège officially, but we don't actually finish in Liège anymore. For roughly the first half of this race's existence, it was all about the Belgians. 55 out of the first 64 winners were Belgians. So this was really a race for the home favorites. But things shifted dramatically in the 80s. And now, in the last 15 years, there's been just one Belgian victory. And just one rider from Belgium to even make the podium. That being Philippe Gilbert, who won in 2011 and was third in 2010. So other than Gilbert, there really have been a number of different nationalities standing on the podium in recent years, with Belgium being conspicuously absent.
However, the people who have not been conspicuously absent are riders who have been suspended for doping offenses. I think you can really look at any race around this time period and say that a lot of the names on the results sheet were on drugs, but nowhere like Liège have you seen the sanctioned suspended guys. I mean, Tyler Hamilton, Davide Rebellin, Alexander Vinokourov, Alejandro Valverde, Danilo De Luca. And those guys were all in a row, like year after year. I did not skip any years. I am not the sort of guy who likes to brand somebody as a doper and see them shipped off to Doper Island to, you know, fight with the dinosaurs for scraps of meat for the rest of their lives. So it doesn't really bother me that much that a guy like Valverde, for example, is still among the favorites. But I think this race just is very indicative in that time period of what was going on in that time period, and also kind of reflects how among the classics, this is the most aerobically intensive, if that makes sense. The climbs are not huge. They're not tour climbs, but they're definitely longer and bigger. And I think that maybe put a little more emphasis on preparation, as they used to say.
I'd first like to say that I kind of would like to see this battle royale on Doper Island. I feel like Jan Ulrich would probably come away with the most food. I think, you know, he's kind of big and he looks just kind of, he looks like he'd be able to win a battle for scraps. Secondly, you point out the route here. I think this is probably among all of the one-day races, the big ones on the calendar, one of the most favored by the real climbers, because there's just so many climbs here, and that probably has something to do with that sort of 15-year period where so many of those race victories were EPO-fueled. But there is a very climber-centric route here. So that being the case, let's jump into the route. Liège-Bastogne-Liège is 253 kilometers in total, certainly among the longest of the one-day races on the World Tour calendar, and one of the bumpiest as well, especially in the final third or so. There are officially 10 climbs on this profile, and 8 of those 10 are, yeah, they're roughly in the last third here, and they're pretty tough.
They are definitely tough, but for me, you know, the real battle of the race begins on La Redoute. It's very iconic, even among the climbs in this race. A lot of the climbing here happens in pretty nice looking forests, and Redoute is open. I mean, it's in a field full of camper vans. There's a big highway on one side of it, far enough away from the road that it doesn't, you know, distract, but you'll know it's La Redoute because people will have written Phil all the way up the road, because Philippe Gilbert was born in the region. And it's relatively longish. It's just short of 2K, but the average is a little under 10%. I think it makes a great launch pad because the steepest part is kind of right at the end, and it sort of flattens out at the top. So if you make a punch on a steep section, put out that effort and make that gap, you know, you can carry it pretty quickly. I also like it because it's a little narrow. So you have these huge drunken camper van crowds on the side of the road. And I feel like the past two seasons, you've seen teams sort of try and keep the lid on things as far as they can into the climb by just putting three or four riders across the front of the group. People still manage to get around, but, you know, it's something to watch for tactically. And of course, if you're into the history, you can go to YouTube and see the Frank Vandenbroek attack that he called before the race. And it's, he did make a winning attack on this climb, which is really hard to do considering its distance from the finish. And, it's all there on YouTube for you. But right now, it's generally not a platform for race winners. It's, you usually see a smaller group of outsiders kind of slip away here and try to either work for their leaders behind or maybe catch the rest of the peloton napping. After that is the Côte de Roche à Falcon, which I guess means the Rock Falcon Hill. It's shorter. It's 1.3K, and it's sort of made up of two steep pitches. It hasn't been a big race-breaking climb, but the descent is a little tricky, and in 2012, Nibali slipped away here. And actually looked like he was going to win the race for a long time before completely running out of gas on the Côte de Saint-Nicolas, which is sort of the last climb of the race. It isn't really, because the race almost finishes on a climb, but it's the last climb that isn't the finish climb. I really view it as the last chance for a rider who needs to finish solo to escape. It's about 1.5K. It's about 7.5%, but it's cool for me because it's very urban. You know, there are row houses along the side of it. They look really beat up because Liège is a kind of beat up post-industrial city. It really reminds me of North Adams and Pittsfield and Springfield. I grew up in New England, and there's a very similar kind of gray, worn out feel to the buildings. And to a certain extent, to the people who are on the side of the road cheering, you usually see attacks here from people who aren't huge favorites to win. They're usually not tactical. It's usually a guy who's like, well, I feel better than I thought I would. I'm going to give it a shot. They usually get caught before the top of the climb. And then my favorite part of Liège is this finish into Aon. It's not really even a climb so much as a protracted rise, but then there's a 90 degree corner and then you start the sprint so that you don't have something like an Amstel where you can have guys break away and then regroup and then sprint. Like Dan Martin, when he won the race, he basically marked an attack by Joaquin Rodriguez. He was like, I feel pretty good, attacked, went around the corner and soloed in, which was just crazy. I mean, no, I had never seen him do anything like that. And he basically repeated the feat at Lombardy, and it's really sort of become his trademark, I feel like, these long, powerful attacks. 2014 didn't go so well for him, kind of tried to do the same thing and slid out on the last corner, which is really weird because it is a 90 degree turn, but it's not. It's at the top of a hill, so he wasn't going that fast. I'm pretty sure he didn't clip a pedal. Don't really know what went on there, and I don't really know he would have been able to stay away from the sprint that was coming with Gerrans and with Kwiatkowski. So I love the sort of uncertainty of that finish. And again, it's not in Liège, but it still has that sort of world-worn urban feel to it.
So really, there's opportunities to attack pretty much all over this profile, and really even down to the final kilometer, there's places to go and to launch your move. The race has come down to reduced sprints a number of times, but often that's after just one attack after another. So that makes for a pretty exciting event, and I think that's one of the reasons why so many people like the fact that the classics come to a close in Liège, because it's a great finale just because there's so many places to launch your move.
Including from 100K out, like Jens Vogt and Vinokourov in 2005, I think?
Yes, Vino's first victory. He then won again in 2010. Well, now that Vino has retired from racing on the road, and there are other potential contenders in this race, let's get into the conversation of the start list and the riders with a chance to win here. All right, getting into the start list and looking at some of the riders most likely to contend here. Last year's winner of Liège-Bastogne-Liège was Orica Green Edge's Simon Gerrans. He's here this year, but unfortunately, he had a very bad crash earlier in the year, and he's just coming back from an injury. He's back racing, but he hasn't quite looked up to speed just yet. So he's here, I think. Orica Green Edge might be supporting some of their other riders, maybe Michael Matthews or Michael Albacini. And hopefully Gerrans can recover quickly, but I just don't really see him defending his title here in Liège 2015.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to disagree with you, but I just Liège is too tough a race to kind of jump into half fit. And a guy who has commented that he likes the toughness of Liège, allegedly tougher due to a small readjustment to the course this year, is Alejandro Valverde. And I, you know, gotta be the top favorite here. The bookies certainly agree, and I think so would anyone who watched his win at Flèche Wallonne on Wednesday. Just so controlled going up that climb. Like he was aware of his where he was position-wise, he was aware of his opponents, and he was aware of when he was going to win the race, and there was nothing anyone else could do about it. My big concern with Valverde is kind of his age. I remember in 2006 when he won his first Liège-Bastogne-Liège, he beat Paolo Bettini, and the look on Bettini's face of just confusion and defeat. Bettini some backstory. Paolo Bettini is really, you know, the Alejandro Valverde of his generation, a very versatile, punchy rider. At no point was he ever a Grand Tour contender, but definitely the guy who could climb and the guy who could sprint. And I sort of viewed that 2006 win for Valverde as sort of a passing of the mantle. And I'm kind of wondering if we might see something like that in the finish this year, where if Valverde comes in, he feels confident, and someone else blows by him in the finish.
One of those younger riders who I think is ready to grab the proverbial baton and run with it is, of course, Amstel Gold Race winner and reigning road world champion Mikhail Kwiatkowski. Much like Alejandro Valverde, he's incredibly versatile. He can climb. He's got a great sprint. He's got a very impressive ability to go solo. And for Kwiatkowski, I think he's enjoying a chance here to give his team at Quickstep a bit of redemption, a bit of classics redemption after so many races in Flanders and then in Roubaix, where the team came close to victory but was unable to come away with a big win. He finally gave them their big classics win in Amstel. He took a backseat to Julian Alaphilippe in La Flèche Wallonne, who came in second there, and now I think he's going to come back with a vengeance here in Liège. He's got a great skill set for the race because he's such a strong soloist and sprinter. So you could see him try to launch an attack, or you could see him try to hold somebody's wheel until the finale. Last year, I think Kwiatkowski had a really great chance at winning. He was well positioned for the three-man sprint right up until the point where Dan Martin crashed in the final corner, and Kwiatkowski had to swing wide around him, and he lost a couple of bike lengths, and I think that kind of put him out of contention for the finishing sprint. If I'm Kwiatkowski, I'm really ready to come back in this race and show the world that I can win it. He's young, but he's already shown he's a savvy bike racer, and I think he's got a great opportunity here to, yeah, as you said, kind of grab the mantle from Valverde and become that big one-day hilly classics racer of now.
And you mentioned that Dan Martin crash, and I mean, that was, other than what caused the crash, the other big discussion point was, would Martin have won? And I, to this day, I cannot honestly answer the question, like, because it would have, it's impossible to know, but it didn't seem like a given one way or another that he'd get away or that he would be caught. And, you know, that would be two consecutive wins coming into this race for Dan Martin. And that kind of gives him a case for being the dominant Liège guy of this era. Obviously that, you know, he did fall and there was no chance for him to win that race. But I think Dan Martin can do things that other riders just cannot do. Like his ability to put in a huge surge when everyone else is jockeying for position and make a separation and hold it to the line. It's just, there isn't anyone else who can do it. There have been rumors that he's injured, but to me, it sounds like that'll, you know, it's the second oldest trick in the book, you know, oh, you know, I'm not going to win, I'm feeling bad. It's like saying, oh, I'm not the favorite, except, it's like saying, oh, I'm not the favorite, this other guy is. It's just one of those, it's almost a trope of the cycling genre, something you have to do if you're a favored rider coming into an event.
One thing that Dan Martin and Kwiatkowski, for that matter, have that Valverde might not have is a propensity to actually take risks. And with Valverde, we've seen time and time again, he'll hold on to a wheel and just hope a race ends in a sprint. And there are enough riders in this race who I think are capable of launching long-range attacks that Valverde really could get stuck in a chasing group with one man up the road when Dan Martin and Mikhail Kwiatkowski are the types of riders who will be that one man up the road. And that aggressive streak in both of them, I think, could really help them here. I think Valverde is going to be hard to beat, but those two riders are the types of guys who aren't going to be afraid to try something in the final, you know, 1 kilometer, the final 500 meters even, to try to sneak away from a sprint. Philippe Gilbert, the sort of guy who would be able to do that as well, much like Dan Martin, he could be injured.
Even without injury, Gilbert can be kind of enigmatic. It really, I remember there was some Tumblr post a couple of years ago where there was a picture of Gilbert smiling I think after Brabant's appeal, maybe. And it was just, the caption was, "This is just going to be one of those weeks where Gilbert wins everything, isn't it?" And like that really is his, or at least it had been at the peak of his career, his MO. I'm not so sure that's something that we can kind of get out of him these days. He definitely looked really good at Amstel, but at the same time, I mean, he didn't win. He didn't really factor in the actual finish of the race, that last kick. And I really, if he had given Greg Van Avermaet, you know, 30 more meters of lead out, that could have made the difference in the race. I still don't think Van Avermaet would have won, but he would have been a lot happier and certainly a much closer contender in that sprint. So I don't really know what to think of Gilbert here. He definitely has a good team behind him, a team with, you know, that if Gilbert doesn't personally have that sort of risky aggression, his team definitely does. And so they could get a guy into a break after La Redoute and really leverage tactics and put him in the best position he's been in to win this race since 2011.
You mentioned Gilbert and maybe not quite having the ability he once had. You mentioned Alejandro Valverde's age. One rider who's certainly getting up there in the years department is Joaquim Rodriguez. He's a two-time runner-up in this race. It's really a race that Pirito has been dying to win for years, and he's just never quite gotten there. Obviously, the profile suits him with all these short, steep climbs, but at some point you have to wonder whether he's still got enough left in the tank to compete here. He's almost 36. Winning this race would mean a ton to him, but I have to think time is running out. He also doesn't have quite the sprint that some of his rivals like Valverde or Kwiatkowski enjoy, so he may have to try to go it alone on one of these climbs at some point. Though he can count on a really, really impressive squad to support him or maybe offer alternatives here.
Absolutely. The whole team, the group of favorites for this race, all above 30, all above 33, I think. But, you know, you've got a guy in Giampaolo Caruso, who was fourth in 2014. You have Daniel Moreno, who was ninth last year. They will have a lot of options. And the trick, I think, for Katusha is going to be really, A, picking a guy, and B, getting the other people to kind of put all in efforts to see that other person win. I don't think I've ever seen huge, brilliant tactical work from Katusha. And I think that's kind of to their detriment here.
Yeah, if they can really put it all together, they have the experience and the ability, you would think, to really make something happen in this race and maybe finally win it for Rodriguez or maybe add to Moreno or Caruso's, you know, Palmares. Another rider who's been on the lookout for really any one big one-day win for years, and he came close when Maxime Maglinski won the race, is Vincenzo Nibali. If there's any rider who's going to win this race with a really long-range attack, I kind of think of Nibali as the guy to be the one to do it, or certainly one of maybe two or three more likely options here. He's been very active in the Ardennes races so far this year. He's really always active in the one-day events, even if he doesn't quite have that big victory in his career. He looks good form-wise. Stana can also play the Jakob Fuglsang card. Fuglsang was one of the top 10 finishers in La Flèche Wallonne, so two great climbers on this team, guys who can go from afar and maybe make something happen.
To me, if you're going to talk about a team with a lot of strong riders for this race, you really have to talk about a lot of Soudal, especially after Tim Wellens' attack this past Wednesday at Flèche Wallonne. I mean, I don't think he looked back once. He was like, I'm going, you know, let's see if you catch me or where, you know, let's see how far up the mirror I can make it on my own. But just such a powerful guy and really commits to his attacks. And in a race like Liège, where it can get kind of tactical between groups, I think that sort of heads down style could really serve him well. Again, his teammate, Jelle Vanendert, perhaps you saw him discarding a gel wrapper into David Tanner, the kind of the revelation of Amstel.
I saw that in that How the Race Was Won series.
Yeah, those are good, aren't they?
Yeah, they're really good.
I wonder who puts those on. He must be awesome.
He probably is.
Yeah, Vanendert didn't really show his best self at Amstel, but his teammate, Tony Gallopin, did. Definitely made it to the finale with the leaders in that sprint group. Didn't really set up well for it. Didn't have an amazing finish, but certainly showed the fitness and the ability to really play in a race like Liège. And Gallopin is a guy who he showed last year at the Tour, really strong tactically, really strong when things are tough. I think Liège is going to be a much better race for him.
So we've talked about Katusha and their team strength, Astana and Lotto Soudal, another team that I'm really impressed by the riders they're bringing to this race is AG2R Le Mondial. And for a team that was 3 years ago kind of the bottom of the world tour, they've really turned it on the last couple of years, and they've got a bunch of guys who can do something here. Domenico Pozzovivo last year was in a late attack that almost made it to the line. He finished the race in fifth place. Romain Bardet is an impressive both climber and just one-day racer, and he kind of found his one-day racing legs last year, and he's got a nice explosive kick, I think, more explosive than people realize, so another option for them. Ronaldo Nocentini, quick at the line. So AG2R has a number of different options here, and they're kind of taking an interesting prep track in that some of their riders are going to be coming from the Giro del Trentino. So interesting to see how well that's going to prepare them for racing in Liège-Bastogne-Liège. Trex, Bauke Mollema, always got a quick finishing kick. Sergio Henao looking strong this time of year. Rui Costa coming on in the Ardennes races. I think he's got the skill set for them, even though he's never really done a lot here. Tinkoff Saxo's Roman Kreuziger looks pretty good right about now. We mentioned Dan Martin. I think Tom Hjelte-Slagter, his teammate, could maybe pull something off. Tom Dumoulin for Giant Alpecin. Some of the guys maybe on the fringe. This is not really a race that's kind to really, really fringe outsiders. So I don't think we need to go too deep into the long shot conversation here, just because history would suggest that the really long, long shots don't tend to do all that well here. Well, that, I think, wraps up the contenders section. So I'm ready to prognosticate on how this race might turn out. I'll go first this time, Cosmo. I think I've asked you to take the plunge for us a number of times in recent shows.
Honestly, it's worked out pretty well for me, so I can't.
Oh yeah, I guess it has worked out pretty well. I mean, if you'd like to take the honors,
please,
here again,
please.
Okay, all right. So I see this race really coming down to a maybe 3 or 4 man battle, and so I guess I have to pick three. Alejandro Valverde looks really strong right now. He's just got the right combination of skills that it's hard for me to pick anyone else as a more likely winner. And I see his finishing sprint as critical here, because I think there's a real possibility that a couple guys come to the line and he just waits and waits and beats them in a sprint. So for Valverde, I'm expecting that he's in the top three somewhere. And more than anyone else, I think he's a likely winner. But I do think Mikov Kwiatkowski has got a great chance of winning another big race here. He, too, has a great sprint. He's not afraid to go on the attack. Perfect combination of skills. These climbs, I think, might be a bit more challenging than what he ran into in the finale at Amstel. So that's my one question here, but I think he can handle it, and I think he'll be a really top contender. And then Joaquim Rodriguez, despite his age, Katusha's got so many different options that if they can just finally put it all together here and really work together to support Rodriguez trying to finally win this race, it's going to be hard for any other team. There's a lot of teams in this race that are good, but I see their combination of options as giving them a nice leg up. And Rodriguez on good form right now. We saw in the Basque Country just how strong he is right now. So I think he's got a great chance of getting away on one of these finishing climbs, one of these last steep climbs, and maybe holding out to the finish and finally coming away with that big win. But I do think he'll at least have a great chance at the podium, whatever happens. So that's my top three.
So it's a good top three. I definitely see where you're coming from on all of them. I'm going to have to go with Kwiatkowski to win this race. Like, I can't not pick him. He's on a hot streak. His team, despite not having a Cobbles Classic season up to their standards, has never looked weak. Martin was up the road for him at Amstel. Alaphilippe did not do poorly at Flèche Wallonne. It's especially after his finish last year, like, I can't see him not winning this race. The only way I can see him not winning the race is if Martin gets away and wins in the last whatever, which he totally could do. I'm actually going to put Martin in second, even though that makes no sense, because it really seems like he either wins or he's barely in the top 10, if at all. And third, probably Valverde. Just because he is a guy who I feel like if this race were 500K long, he could still manage to hang in with the group. But, you know, I think his moment of being the invincible young dude was a decade ago. And I really see Kwiatkowski kind of filling that space.
I really like the idea of handing over the baton and seeing the younger generation rise. So even if it means, my prediction not coming true and yours once again, I certainly won't have a problem with Kwiatkowski winning. I think it's a great thing for watching these races, seeing these young guys kind of finally taking over for this generation of Valverdes who have really been on the scene for so long. So your prediction coming true certainly would not bum me out. To close out our Liège-Bastogne-Liège episode, I would just like to point out how much I love this race and how awesome the parkour and the start list and the history, they all work together to make it a really entertaining event, a scenic race really through a nice part of Belgium that has so many opportunities for excitement.
I really love this race too. I think it's a great, I've seen it won so many different ways. You know, I've seen the 100K attack. I've seen apparently it get bought for 100,000 euros. I've seen a guy break away miraculously, like at the last possible minute and win. I've seen the same guy slide out on the very same corner the next year. It's just a really cool race. There, you've got the forests, you've got the fields, you've got the post-industrial Liège. It's, I really like it. I think it works the best of all the Ardennes classics, all three, though really only two of them. Yeah, and to me, it's a race I look forward to every year, and I just think it's a really good way to kind of wind out the classic season.
It is. Wow, you're right. We're really, this is the end. It's the end of the one-day racing. It kind of bums me out.
It's a bit of a bummer, but I'm ready for some stage races, and I think this has been a really cool classic season. Yeah, you know, we didn't see the two guys we want to see most in Conchalara and in Bonin, but at the same time, like, they're getting kind of older, and we've seen a lot of people from countries that aren't Italy or Belgium winning races here. You know, you had a Norwegian winning Tour of Flanders. You had a German winning Paris-Roubaix for the second time ever, separated by the entirety that Paris-Roubaix has been around. You know, you had a Polish guy winning the biggest Dutch race. It's granted, all these countries are, you know, a 4-hour train ride away from each other, but still, it's a good step to see the sort of internationalization coming into the most kind of opaque races for people outside of cycling. The classics are awesome. I love them. But, you know, you go up to a guy on a street in Manhattan, you can't talk about Gent-Wevelgem, but you can mention the Tour de France and they know what that is. And so it's cool to see this insular, exciting part of the sport kind of growing out of its little Belgian enclave.
Yeah, it is pretty exciting. And speaking of enclaves, the landlocked mountain nation of Switzerland will be hosting the next race on the World Tour calendar, and our next show will be focusing on said race, the Tour de Romandie. So enjoy Liège-Bastogne-Liège. I'm certainly looking forward to it. Don't get too bummed out by the fact that the classics are coming to a close, because the Tour de Romandie is just around the corner and the Giro d'Italia is right behind it. So We'll be back for Romandy very soon, 2 days from now, and then the Giro after that. Until then, this has been another episode of The Recon Ride. I'm Dane Cash.
And I'm Cosmo Catalano.
And that's our show.